Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
Middle-aged white man's chant. I will take over the world. Do.
Were those tubas?
No, that's just me, my tuba imitation. Had a nice time at the Urban Grind open mic last night. Brought some of my students over. My students really loved it because sometimes you get on an open mic, county open mic, and the comedy is it's really bad. The last time we went wasn't all that great. You know, it depends who you get and if they're trying out new stuff. This night was a really good lineup. Had some really funny stuff. And sometimes jokes just present themselves. I got to riff off a couple of jokes. And I will say this. It's run by my good friend, A.K. Bjorn.
Also known as Bjorn? What?
No. I guess we call him A.K. And then the host was Dwayne Jackson. And Dwayne Jackson, very, very funny guy. Really nice guys. I mean, these are two African-American gentlemen. And the majority of the comedians were African-American. You know, there were a couple of token white guys like me and Laura Aston was there. And actually, now that I think about it, everyone else was either Indian or I think there were only two white people in the whole lineup. But here's the killer.
Were you in the minority?
Yeah, and
that's
that was great.
Nice.
When you're a comedian, a lot of times you are when you're a white guy and going on open mic. But the interesting thing was I got there about 5 minutes before 8. Which, you know, is I was a little uncomfortable getting there that close to the time, but I was walking over with my students. But I thought, come on, this is a comedy open mic. These are comedians. These people are not on time. And particularly, these same two guys told me about the stereotype of black people being late. Mm. Right? They're the ones that taught me about that. And so it turns out I was the last guy there. And then Dwayne showed up late, right after me. You know, we were like three comics in, and then he started to host. And I want to thank Dwayne for coming later than me, because, you know, had he not shown up late, then the last comic to arrive would have been the middle-aged white guy, and that's just wrong.
Did the crowd like that?
The crowd loved that. That was a funny, funny joke. It was an interesting perspective in race relations. It was actually very good. It was a good, open, honest discussion. I enjoyed it.
Was it a discussion, or was it just a joke and people laughed?
Well, there were jokes and there was feedback. And there was people throwing scones at you. It is finally happening. No, I'm getting over my...
Don't snort into the mic. That's bad news.
My 103 fever from this weekend.
Yeah, that'll burn a person up.
So
it's kind of too bad it wasn't 105, because then you'd have an excuse.
Right, for just not having proper brain function. I don't know. I mean, my friend Tim Lee said it best, and I don't think he was the first one to say it, but he's the first one to tell me.
Do you mean
that
good-looking comedian?
The good-looking comedian. Did I tell you? Yeah, we talked about this.
I met him. He was right here.
But didn't we talk about his new show?
Oh, a show? No, I the handsome man.
The incredibly handsome comedian tour or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, that's just hilarious. It was
basically three California blonde guys who were like,
they're brunette. But
good looking enough.
Yeah, they're good looking dudes and they do comedy and I think women like to come to their shows. Yeah, that's good. His goal is to do a lot of bachelorette parties in Vegas. I think it's brilliant. I think that's a brilliant idea. You know, do what you got to do.
I thought a bachelorette party was like the worst thing you could see at your comedy show.
No, it's the best thing you could see at your comedy show.
I think some people disagree with you.
Some people do disagree with me, actually. Some people think that invites lowbrow comedy.
But we know how you feel about lowbrow comedy.
I just like people who will laugh and enjoy your jokes. Women laugh more than men because laughter is an emotional response. Women are a bit more in touch with their emotions. And there are studies that will back that
up, by
the way.
Don't be sexist, Pete. Don't be sexist.
I don't think I am being sexist.
I cry all the time.
I do, too. Well, not all the time, but I cry.
I'm crying right now.
I cry. You're about to make me cry, actually.
You see what's dripping down my face? Oh, wait, that's coffee.
Yeah, I think that's blood.
What you got? What you got in the picture?
I don't think you should, you know, trim your nose hairs with an ice pick. That's what I'm saying.
It just seemed like a good idea at the time. What you got? What do you have?
So, for those of you that do not live here on the lovely campus of Georgia Tech in Atlanta, Georgia, Neil deGrasse Tyson came here recently to give a talk.
My favorite astrophysicist.
Is he? Is he the only astrophysicist?
He's pretty much the only. Well, actually, that's not true. John Wise is my favorite astrophysicist.
Okay.
He's here on campus.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. He runs the visualization lab over there.
The scientific visualization?
Well, it is a astrophysics visualization lab.
Hmm.
So the visualization lab in the physics department is okay. What he runs.
So, but are you a fan of Neil deGrasse Tyson?
We have spoken about Neil deGrasse Tyson on the podcast before.
Funny, I don't remember.
Is that true? You don't remember? You've been having a tough year, haven't you, Pete? You've lost a lot of memory.
I think I've been having a tough decade.
You're sort of a memento kind of guy now.
I'm a pimento kind of guy?
Memento. You need to write things on your arm in Sharpie to remember that. I think you should probably get some tattoos, some social security numbers.
All right, hang on a second. All right. Charlie pauses like I was pulling up my pants or something.
I thought for a moment that you were going to answer a phone or that there was going to be some kind of...
I'm getting my stately reading glasses.
I thought that you were essentially saying, hold for edit, Charlie. That's what I thought was happening. But your reading glasses. Which have a lovely sort of middle-aged cougar kind of pattern on the side there.
What are these? The tortoiseshell ones? Yeah, they are. No, I just buy this sort of the generic 20-pack.
Are those basically magnifying glasses?
Yeah, they're just magnifying glasses.
Okay.
So there. I can't afford real lenses.
I am disappointed that you don't remember us talking about Neil deGrasse Tyson's quote about how we're all stardust and my reaction to that.
No, and didn't you like that? You liked that characterization. Or did you hate that characterization? I remember the stardust thing.
It's a 50-50. Why don't you go ahead and make a final guess, and we'll decide whether you're right or not.
You're bitter and angry, so I'm going to guess you hated that characterization.
Thank God you remembered.
Well, so I'm just going with the trend.
Yeah, no.
Everything.
I am not. That's not true. Hmm. It's not true. I mean, a little bit, but not true. Okay. What did NDT have to say?
Well, so first of all, in the interest of full disclosure... let me tell you that sometimes Neil deGrasse Tyson drives me nuts.
Oh, how so?
I'm horribly jealous.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, there's a guy named Norman Goldman who's a progressive radio commentator. Do you ever listen to him? He's a lawyer.
Norman Goldman? Is that how he says
Norman
his
Goldman,
name?
But he says Norman Goldman because it makes him sound like a superhero with a utility belt or something. I don't know why he does that. It's his marketing. This is shtick.
I can't begrudge him that.
And I'm trying to think. I believe he lives out in California.
It wouldn't work.
He sounds like an obnoxious.
Charlie Bennett.
This is like a shop at Jacques Penny.
Target.
Yeah. I forget. He seems like a New Yorker. He sounds like a really obnoxious New Yorker.
Or even the Publix.
Oh, that's good, Publix. But he's actually has some very insightful commentary.
Publix was unable to find my WMDs.
Your weapons of mass destruction?
No. Wet naps, mercury, and diapers.
Okay. Wet naps and diapers, I understand. Mercury? You're buying mercury as a household?
For some reason, it's the first thing that came to mind when I thought M. Mercury thermometer, probably.
Mm. You don't use the electronic ones?
I don't use them at all. I'm scared to stick things into my baby.
Okay, that's fine. But I actually had to use a thermometer this weekend when I had this high fever.
On yourself, you're not scared to stick anything in you.
Really? How do you know that?
I just know from looking at you, Pete.
No,
it's obvious.
I don't, you know, when I go
You'll
in...
You'll jam something up there if necessary, won't you?
Well, to take my temperature, yeah, I'll put it under my tongue. We don't own a rectal thermometer, if that's what you mean.
I just want to point out that you're the first person to say rectal in this podcast.
I'll tell you what always bothered me, though, as an engineer. What's the difference between an oral and a rectal thermometer? They're labeled differently. They appear to be different.
You just have to go with one or the other and be consistent.
But a thermometer is a thermometer. You're measuring a cavity temperature. It shouldn't be different. I'm going to have to look that up. That really bothers me.
I sense either a joke or a depression coming after you find out the truth of this.
An utter breakdown and so basic you get jealous. Social services.
I'm totally with you because I often get jealous of the media personalities that I seem the most like. In fact, there was a dude who I met because he was friends with an old high school buddy. I met him, and he was a novelist, and his book got bought and adapted into a movie. The script was written by Nick Cave. And I was, you know, raised in the same area, running in the same circles.
What was the movie?
The movie was Lawless.
Did I see that?
It had Shia LaBeouf.
Oof. Is it like Target? It's a fancy French name.
And Tom Hardy in it. Jessica Chastain.
Doesn't sound familiar.
Gary Oldman.
Big names.
Yeah. It was a good movie. I really liked it. Despite the presence of a somewhat contentious young actor. And Nick Cave adapted the book into a screenplay. And I just, I was filled with jealousy. And jealousy in the classic sense that I was not envious of him in that, oh, that's really cool. Good for you. I was jealous. Oh, why am I not like that? Why? Yeah. So I'm with you.
Well, so Norman Goldman recently began his broadcast a day or two ago by saying, he said, today is Schadenfreude all the way. I said, it's not something we should do. It's not something we should be proud of. If you want to call me up and criticize me, feel free. But he took a little bit of pleasure in a conservative minister who got caught having an affair and all this sort of stuff. And actually, the same thing happened on MSNBC last night about this Louisiana congressman who ran on family values and then had an affair with his one of his staffers.
Is any of this ever surprising at this point?
No, but, you know, momentary weakness by people, I'm not going to judge. I'm going to, in fact, I am going to borrow from those very same right-wing Christian folks, you know, let he is without sin cast the first stone. You know, I think that's a good... You're not perfect. Don't be too critical of other people.
Do you get to choose the area, though? Because there's a few things that I definitely haven't done, and I feel like I could throw those stones. I mean, there's some areas that, like, oh, yeah, if someone else were to do something terrible in terms of, well, I don't know about the statute of limitations. just to keep it from being too personal, like, someone who does badly in school, I never say, ugh, awful. You fool. Mm-hmm. What an idiot. You know, because I did really badly in school for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I understand. I would never cast a stone. I would never mention it to someone who's like, oh, yeah, he's stupid. He got an F, you know?
Well, I mean, I've never been unfaithful to my wife, but if you've been unfaithful to your spouse...
Do you want to redo that? Do you want to say it again with that little hitch in the middle?
No, there was no hesitation there.
Because I think she'll notice.
No,
if she listens to this, she's going to hear
it. There was no hesitation. But these people who have...
I can't speak, it burns! But I'm faithful to my wife.
But that's the thing. I mean, neither one of these two commentators, or myself, is going to judge people who have, you know, fallen short, as they call it, unless you walk around preaching to other people saying, look, you're amoral, you should follow my view, I don't want any of these gay people getting married, but, you know, I'm the pinnacle of marriage, you know... whatever marriage should be, I don't know. And then you screw up like that. So Norman Goldman admitted...
Did they really screw up, or did they just keep doing things the way they wanted to?
Well, maybe they did. I don't know. All I know is Norman Goldman admitted, in the interest of public disclosure, that, hey, I'm taking a little pleasure out of this. Too bad. And I will say this. Neil deGrasse Tyson, I'm jealous of Neil deGrasse Tyson because...
Because he lives the life he wishes he could live.
To some degree, yeah, absolutely. I consider myself sort of an outreach science communicator guy. I think I'm funnier than Neil deGrasse Tyson. I don't care what people who met him here on campus say. But here, I will say this, that the people that saw his talk said it was fabulous. So, you know, that being said, he's good at what he does.
He is
and it's important.
An astonishing performer.
Oh, yeah, it's good stuff.
And I've seen some video of him.
I wish I had seen him,
and
actually.
He is thoughtful and direct when he is on stage.
Yeah, he's doing a service, and everyone here at Georgia Tech enjoyed his talk. But he's preaching to the choir there.
I should say that the only problem I have with Neil deGrasse Tyson
is the mustache.
No.
It's a grooming thing.
No, I'm sorry, but you're... Okay, so the only two problems I have with Chris Tyson... Now, he can wear the mustache if he wishes. No, the only problem I have with him is I sense, and this could just be me, and I'm totally fine if it's just me.
And you are bitter and angry, so it could be you.
A crypto-spiritualism in some of his broader generalizations about how one can connect emotionally to the universe and the secrets of existence.
Okay, crypto-spiritualism. Mm-hmm. Go. What the hell is that?
As I have said before, when you use the fact that we are all stardust to drive somehow your emotional connection to people or the universe or ourselves and use that to replace that feeling of connection to God or existence... Mm-hmm. And then also say things like, you need evidence, you know, I'd be fine with religious claims if there was evidence for them. I think you're indulging in crypto-spiritualism in that you are using the metaphors. Mm-hmm. Right? And people have gotten on me. Like, a few, the six people who actually listen to this podcast have said to me, we are stardust, you're being an asshole, why are you so stuck on that? And I'll tell you why. Strap in. Thank you. But don't, because I'm not really going to go anywhere with this. It's just
I'm ready.
When you say, we are all stardust, and then you say, and it's true. It's true we are stardust. Okay, fine. It is true.
Right.
But it doesn't matter.
Right.
Right? It's not anything beyond a fact of existence. And to use that to say, you know, oh, now we're connected to the, you know, the stuff that's up in the stars. And if you look at the universe and you find that it's far too big, just think we are all stardust. And somehow feel safe, somehow feel comforted. Mm-hmm. You're indulging in religion, which is also fine, except that Neil deGrasse Tyson talks about religion as a set of stories, as a set of fables. You know, as a thing that should
religious
not,
tradition is that. It's
that
a big
should
narrative.
Not direct policy and should not direct science.
Right.
But then he's using this sort of scientific, oh, it's an established thing. It's true. We the stuff we are made in stars. He's using that to slip into faith, to slip into spiritualism, to slip into this.
But does he really slip you into spiritualism? Because spiritualism requires blind faith. I don't think he ever asked you for that.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
What are you saying? And you never define crypto-spiritualism.
I think I just did.
What is that, encoded spiritualism?
His bullshit about stardust, his bullshit poetry, sounds like a religious person trying to make shit up.
It does, but I think he's trying to find the appropriate balanced metaphor to engage people.
No, f*** that.
I think he's
absolutely
trying.
Not.
No. I can't believe I'm defending Neil. I'm behind you, buddy.
Screw that, all right? I'm sick.
And you don't like the way he did it. Maybe you like the way someone else does it.
No, I don't like how anybody does it. That's my problem.
You've got serious problems.
I am
they have
sick.
Rehab for that. Actually.
I am sick of people trying to bridge that gap in ways that use the tools of the other side. I don't like it when people say things like, we've found the evidence of Noah's Ark, da-da-da-da. And I don't like it when people say, if you look at the dance of the molecules, blah, blah, blah. I'm sick of that crap.
Okay.
Sorry. That's where I'm at.
Okay.
I think
I'm going to cut him a little slack, and I'm the sciencey guy.
Yeah,
I hear you. He's doing the best he can to engage the public.
He's doing an awesome job.
And you're right. If he's you know, we have the same thing. Remember, we talked to Randy Olson, and Randy Olson, you know, he would simplify things to help people understand science and its significance. And people will get mad and send him death threats. He actually talked about that.
I'm not talking about simplifying things.
Yeah.
I'm talking about that moment when you cross over from science educator and champion of a science. What's the opposite of ignorance? Not a science ignorant, but a science blah. A scientifically informed public. Not a scientifically ignorant public, but a scientifically informed public. Not a religiously bound public, but a religious and informed public, right?
Okay.
To then to toss those sops, you know, these just this
But why is the Stardust thing so bad? We are made of the same elements that came from stars. In fact, there's two different types of...
What does that mean to you?
Star deaths.
Sure, sure. All that's fine.
You know, they produce two different ranges of elements. We came from one type.
I don't give a crap. That's not... I don't care the truth of it, right? I accept the truth of it. What does that mean to you that we are stardust?
It just means... I mean, to me, it's interesting how all the intermediate elements of the periodic table were made. Right? I mean, we literally got just a lot of low molecular weight elements
for
stars.
Okay, see, so that's fine. Yeah. What I'm talking about is very particular about that using that scientific fact to sort of half-ass your way into a connection to the universe.
But it is a connection to the universe.
It's not.
What made of came from the death of a star somewhere.
So what?
Well, here's what it is. If I find that kind of cool, it might motivate me to go into a STEM field. And that's important to me right now. We don't have enough folks studying that. That's what we do here to a large degree at Georgia Tech. I'm not joking. This is my job. And if you don't like his choice of metaphor, that's okay.
It's not his choice of metaphor. It's the end result that he's going for.
What is the end result? I don't think he's trying to get me to be a religious dude and accept things blindly.
No, I don't think that either. But it's going for this kind of the comfort of something larger than you. I am disgusted by the desire to be comforted by the immensity of the universe and our place in it.
I don't think I'm comforted by the immensity of the universe. In fact, I find it terrifying.
Of his quote.
But that's his story.
And I'm saying that I hate his story.
No, that's okay.
That's right.
All right, that's cool.
So what's this quote? Now that you got me all riled up.
All right, so the quote that I'm doing is much more mundane.
Ask me to try and explain stuff and then not listening to what I'm explaining.
So Lindsay Purcell, the editor of the Life section of the Technique, our newspaper here.
Hello, Lindsay.
She asked him a number of questions. It was a very interesting interview. Pause for whooping cough incident.
Pertussis? Did you not take your vaccination?
No, I believe in vaccines. And a big shout out to the folks from the lovely chain of restaurants known as Chili's. Chili's was taking a lot of proceeds from particular meals, and they were donating it to an organization that worries about autism. Good for them. I think that's great. But the particular organization they were involved in is an organization that still believed that autism was in part caused by vaccines.
That is presenting the Andrew Wakefield bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. And we've talked about that before. And that's just total crap. And I was jumping up and down as I'm watching my liberal TV, and I'm like, I'm never going to Chili's again, which is a shame because I enjoy a fine meal at Chili's occasionally.
Is that true?
Yeah, I like Chili's.
You trying to get a sponsorship?
No, but the point is people are just like, oh, well, you eat at Chili's. You obviously have no taste. I occasionally like eating at Chili's. But here's the deal. Chili's actually withdrew their sponsorship of that organization.
Because of the anti-vaccination stance?
Right, because a lot of people said, look, this is anti-scientific. You should... And they did. Good for them. Good for them. I think that's great. You know, we do things, and then, you know, when people point out that's maybe not the best thing to do, that's great. So, in any case...
I think you left out a step there.
How did I get on the Chili's thing?
You were thinking about one of their burgers.
I don't know what it was. So, in any case, so she asked Neil deGrasse Tyson a number of questions, and one of them was, do you think classes that weed out students are detrimental to scientific discovery, or should science-based classes be difficult? Do they have weed out classes in the humanities?
That's interesting. Well, first, and I'm not dodging this, but first, tell me what you think.
I think weed out classes are bad.
No. I mean, the answer to your question. What do you think?
Oh, do you have weed out classes in the humanities? No, and here's why. I think humanities classes, business classes that are outside science and engineering, should be every bit as challenging as those inside technical fields, but I think they get adjusted based on supply and demand. I really believe that. Let me give you an example. After the big earthquake in California, before that, there was a certain passage rate for the structure certification test to be a civil engineer in the state of California. And it was the earthquake part, right? So when you're in California, you get certified as a professional engineer, and you have to take a special earthquake part because you're in California. And that might also be true for some neighboring states to California because that's a relevant thing. So you have to get certified as a professional engineer, as a civil engineer that does structures. And that's, you know, so you know how to design a building and maintain it so that it doesn't fall down. Then you also need to know some other special stuff about how to do that in on a fault, right, where there are earthquakes. Makes sense. After that earthquake, the failure rate of that test increased precipitously. Because they wanted to make sure people knew how to design stuff.
Because people weren't going to allow for any fudging anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it was a supply and demand. They're just like, eh. And I don't think that necessarily implies that people design things incorrectly. Some of those, you know, that double-decker highway, I was literally driving on it a month before the earthquake occurred. And I'm trying to remember if I were in the upper deck or the lower deck. I don't remember which one. I was out in California just before that earthquake. And then I moved out there shortly after. We still had aftershocks years later. But and this was espoused by one of my colleagues. They said that it should be just as difficult, but it's not, because then people wouldn't do it and they have a hard enough time attracting people to those majors. Do you think that's true? Seems awful harsh, actually. I'm not sure it is true.
Well, I think that a weed-out class gets called a weed-out class because it knocks out so many people. I don't think that they're designed to be weed-out classes.
Okay, good. Shouldn't be designed.
I think it's a retroactive...
right.
I think it's a retroactive description.
Yeah.
You know, Calculus 1...
after-the-fact thing.
When you land in Calculus 1 after only trigonometry in high school, you know, and you cannot grasp it, and you fail, and that makes you so sad that you transfer to another school that doesn't have the reputation for being difficult on its students. Then after you can look back, one can look back and say, there was a weed out class.
Right.
So I don't think that there are any classes that in the humanities, and also, let's be honest, if you were trying to make a comparison of a calculus class to its equivalent in humanities, it would be something very broad. You know, it'd be like composition.
Right.
You know, it wouldn't be, because, you know, which humanities are we talking about, right? There's not a lot of very broadly applicable skills.
Let's say composition. Let's say rhetoric, which is a skill that our employers that hire students at Georgia Tech complain about all the time. It's a very important skill, the ability to write cogently, succinctly, coherently. Flowerly. You don't have to be the bard.
You'd best not be. There is no writing class that I've ever heard the reputation of a weed out class. That I've ever heard to have the reputation as a weed out class. People don't say, yeah, you know, English 1102, I tried two times and then I just, you know, then I transferred. Like, it doesn't work that way. I imagine that there are classes at, say, the junior level that make people change their major. In the sense that they don't, I'm going to make this up, but when someone says, I don't want to ever talk about what Hawthorne meant ever again, you know, that's sort of like, I don't want to dig into, I don't want to try to interpret a text ever again. I'm sick of, of trying to do that. I imagine that there's some philosophy classes that sort of break somebody. You know, like they just don't want to engage in that
anymore.
And
some philosophy classes can actually be very technical if it's pure philosophy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and by technical, it's just sort of, you mean that there's not a lot of poetry to it?
Yeah, I'm talking about fallacies of logic and things like that.
But there's not a weed out class. There's not a weed out class reputation.
Right.
But there's classes all the time that people...
Cause them to change their
major. Yeah, is a reason that they leave a field.
Right.
I think that, okay, here's my guess. These large classes have such a high number of students that 1% of, you know, 300 students mm-hmm. is a lot more than the 1% of 25 students.
Okay.
You know what
so
I mean?
So it's a size effect.
Yeah. And so calculus.
Right. So you got 30 students saying calculus one sucks. It's a weed out class.
Right.
As opposed to only 3 students saying that about English 1101.
Yeah. Or even a student who is talking about English later. Mm-hmm. You know? So, no, I don't think that there's a class that you could point out to, that you could point out and say, that's a humanities weed out class. I think that there are always classes that were really difficult to get through. In my library school, cataloging was very hard for me. And if I'd had to keep doing cataloging, I would have quit.
Please define cataloging. Now, are we using the Library of Congress classification system or the Dewey Decimal System or some weird thing you scratch on a piece of cardboard with a charcoal stick?
Well, it's interesting that you would bring up the charcoal stick.
They have that in library science?
I heard the whistle blow.
All right, for those of you not familiar with that, Georgia Tech still operates kind of like the North Avenue Trade School, that at passing periods between classes, we have this giant steam whistle go off, which, by the way, if you're near that, it drives people nuts.
So check it out. It's 31, and we're just hitting 9 o'clock.
All right.
If you want, we can just stop. We could stop at the charcoal stick.
No. Can I give Neil deGrasse Tyson's answer?
I don't know. Maybe we should save it for next time.
I'd like to give it to
him. Okay. Hit it.
So his answer was, if you teach a class, any class, for the purpose of having people lose interest in the subject, then you need your head examined. You need all your heads examined. Learning should be the most fun thing we do in life. If someone interferes with it, then swap them out. I couldn't agree more. So if you make an effort to get people excited, engaged, if you make an effort to scaffold the learning process and help them learn it as best you can, and still, it's such an advanced topic for them, they cannot grasp it, so be it.
You know, I know what my problem is with him now.
Uh-oh. I've created another problem with
him. No, it's not that. It's like, okay, the Stardust thing, that's just, it's something that caught me. And at this point now, I'm so locked in, I can't back out, right? I can't ever say, oh, yeah, it's kind of cute.
You're that way.
Yeah, I just don't like it. Okay. I mean, you know, the quote... Here's the original quote. The atoms of our bodies are traceable to stars that manufactured them in their cores and exploded these enriched ingredients across our galaxy billions of years ago.
That's true.
For this reason, we are biologically connected to every other living thing in the world. We are chemically connected to all molecules on Earth, and we are atomically connected to all atoms in the universe. We are not figuratively, but literally stardust. All those connections, those we are this connected, that connected, and the other thing connected, I don't agree, you know, and I think that that's a little bit of a perversion of the connected, the phrase connected.
Okay.
The word connected, excuse me. And also, we are not figuratively, but literally stardust is inaccurate at best and laughable at worst. And then when I hear you say things like learning should be the most fun thing that we do. You know, and anybody who gets in the way. I just don't believe him. I don't believe Neil deGrasse Tyson when he hits those kind of high humanist notes. I don't believe it, and I don't think learning should be the most fun thing in the world. I like sex.
I was going to say sex, but I don't mean the one to...
I like having sex. It's awesome, and it's more fun than learning. let's record... another outro.
Okay.
Concilings with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch of Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.